Next, we'll move on to regulations. So we have several regulations from the Department of Education. These are actually up for information. So there are two for information. We have Emily Cunningham. I believe she is in the room. Again, I can't always tell who's in the room versus on the phone, but she is with us here tonight. She can provide some information about the regulations. The first up is Regulation 615, School Attendance. This is for information only.
Hey, Ms. Sweeney, this is Emily Cunningham, Chief Staff and Policy Analyst for the Department. I'm in the room. And I come before you with Regulation 615, School Attendance. Pursuant to 14 Delaware Code, Sections 122B, 2702H, and 2707, the Secretary of Education will seek the consent of the State Board of Education to amend 14 Delaware Administrative Code 615, School Attendance. This regulation is being amended to clarify the following. Number one, to require that school district and charter school attendance policies include how families and students may access supports and resources for student absences due to social, emotional, and behavioral wellness. Number two, to require the school district and charter school attendance policies and available resources for addressing attendance to be given to parents, guardians, or caregivers when student absences exceed 10 unexcused absences. Number three, to provide school districts and charter schools distribute and explain the school attendance policy to all educators and support staff at the beginning of each school year. Number four, to comply with House Bill 163 of the 121st General Assembly regarding absences due to religious observances. And five, to comply with House Bill 175 of the 151st General Assembly regarding absences for the participation in civic engagements. Persons wishing to present their views regarding this matter may do so in writing by close of business on or before November 21st to the Department of Education. And all of that information can be found on our website. I am happy to answer any questions that anybody may have about this regulation. I will tell you that the Department of Education, as you know, looks at our regulations usually about every 4 years. We knew that there were going to be some changes that needed to be made in Regulation 615 based on two pieces of legislation that were working their way through the General Assembly, and that was House Bill 163 and House Bill 175. So we did wait a little bit so we could bring it to you as one entire regulation and not have to have it come before you in pieces. Again, happy to go through it or happy to answer any questions that anybody may have.
I'm just going to open it up to the floor. I mean, to some degree, there are several pieces of it that are just aligning with legislation, but it's open to any questions or comments from board members.
This is Audrey Noble. This is more of a comment than a question. I know when we discussed the attendance policy a while ago, one of the issues the board brought up was the concern about how attendance was defined and under the Delaware School Success Framework for the accountability formula. I just want to say I did see the work that came out of the accountability group out of Chantel's office that just came out in September, which was the guidance on track attendance, chronic absenteeism. And I really think that particular approach really does address some of the questions that the board brought up earlier. So I just wanted to kind of point that out and say, I'm glad to see that happened.
Thank you, Dr. Noble. That was a question that was raised by a couple of different districts. And we worked really closely with Chantel to make sure that those changes occurred. And so thank you for that acknowledgement.
Yeah.
Thank you. This will come up in front of us, I believe in the next meeting, just looking at the date at which public comment comes back, November or December. But to the extent that anyone has any further questions, you know, please funnel them through us. And then we'll be voting on this in the next month or so. So the next is Regulation 932, Military Connected Youth.
Sure. Again, Emily Cunningham, Department of Education. Pursuant to 14 Delaware Code 122B28, the Secretary of Education will seek the consent of the State Board of Education to reauthorize 14 Delaware Administrative Code 932, Military Connected Youth. This regulation is being reauthorized to keep in keeping with 29 Delaware Code 10407, which requires regulations to be reviewed on the recurring basis of every 4 years. No changes are warranted at this time, therefore it is being reauthorized. Persons wishing to present their views regarding this matter may do so in writing by the close of business on or before November 1st, 2021, and all of that information is on our website. I can tell you that I've spoken with Susan Harbistrow in our NARA student support section, and basically what this regulation does is continue to support 14 Delaware Code Section 122B28, which talks about how they annually identify any enrolled student who is a military-connected youth. And that is, it means that they have an immediate family member, including a parent, step-parent, sibling, or any other person residing in the same household who is on active duty in serving in the reserve branch of or recently retired from a branch of the United States Armed Services. And that includes U.S. Army, U.S. Air Force, Marine Corps, Navy, National Guard, United States Coast Guard, NOAA, or United States Public Health Service. And it is not used for purposes of determining school achievement, growth, or performance.
Any questions or comments? Okay, great. That will come up in front of us again. So thank you, Ms. Cunningham. Appreciate your time tonight. We're going to move on to professional standards boards. We have two in front of us from professional standards boards. They are both up for information this evening. We have with us tonight Dr. Delanea Bradshaw, Executive Director of the Professional Standards Board. She's going to present information on the regulations. I would note she is not going to be here at the November meeting. So to the extent that people have questions, we would very much welcome them coming tonight or that they are emailed so that there is an opportunity for her to address them. So again, to the extent that there are questions, please raise them tonight or make sure that there's a chance for them to be addressed before we vote on this at the next meeting. So with that, regulation first is 1532, middle level mathematics teacher.
Thank you for having me tonight.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
This regulation is currently published. We began revisions to this regulation back in November of last year when we learned that ETS was developing a new praxis exam for middle school math. Delaware sent 3 teachers to the National Standard Setting Study, which happened in January. In April, after ETS released its report of the national study, Delaware convened a group of math teachers and specialists from around the state to review the new test and to recommend a passing score to the Professional Standards Board. The group had 2 follow-up meetings as well. There were 2 issues that the group met about. First was to confirm the passing score, and the second was to determine exactly what courses this certification allowed educators to teach. Many middle schools accelerate to Algebra 1, which is typically a 9th grade course, and there is no clarity in the current regulation as to whether a middle school teacher is certified to teach that course. However, the majority of those teaching Algebra 1 in 8th grade, or some districts call it Integrated Math 1, are teaching with middle school certification. The group felt that because the standards for both Math 8 and Algebra 1 overlap almost entirely, and that algebra is covered in both the current and the new praxis exams, it was appropriate to include algebra explicitly and integrated math into the middle level regulation. Additionally, the group debated whether to allow a middle level certified teacher to teach Algebra 1 or Integrated 1 in the high school. There are certainly drawbacks to including this. However, the group determined that if a person has the skills to teach a particular course in one setting, that it does not make sense that they would not be allowed to teach that same course in a different setting. So therefore, the allowance for a middle school certified teacher to teach algebra in a high school setting is written into section 1.2. Are there any questions?
This is a really broad question, and it may not be appropriate here, but I'm going to ask it anyway. There's so many questions around certification, and as I'm kind of listening to the whole concept of, you know, whether someone who can teach it in middle school is or is not allowed to teach it in high school, And then I go back to the question that Dr. Noble asked, are those teachers even certified in the right subject? Like, it's just an interesting that it, I don't know, it's just like such a juxtaposition of here we are arguing or making a language specific to have the setting, whether it be middle school or high school, and it's the exact same class to some degree, versus we don't even have teachers that have the right certification. So I just find that it's just sort of a comment. But I'm just going to leave it there because I think that makes a lot of sense. If you're teaching the same class, whether it be middle or high school, it's just interesting when we think about kind of what the impact is on a certification for these teachers. But I'm going to leave it there because I do have more questions just about how many people it impacts and kind of what the larger impact is going to be in terms of getting math teachers in schools, because that's an area that, from my understanding, we have a bit of a shortage. I'll open it up to the floor. Sorry.
Dr. Bradshaw, this is Audrey Noble. Yeah, I concur. I mean, that I was thinking exact same thing that Whitney was thinking right there is, you know, because we have some school settings that are, you know, 6 through 12 that are, and we have some schools that are requesting that model. So it's the certification is focused on whether they can teach the subject area, not necessarily where they teach it. Is that's correct?
That is correct. And generally speaking, we do have certain levels on our certifications. Most high school or secondary level certifications are also valid to teach in a middle school. But the idea in general is that, you know, the content is different from a middle school to a high school. And so therefore, we have different certifications for a middle level and a high school level. It's quite different. Most of our non-core content areas are K-12.
Right.
For example, language teachers, whether they're teaching beginning level language in ninth grade or they're teaching it in first grade, they are able to use that certification to teach the language because we are certifying for content. This is a situation that's sort of peculiar to math because of the way the levels are and the particular way that acceleration happens in a lot of schools.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, so the flip side of that, what you just brought up is, what about the teacher's capacity in the area of pedagogy and child development? You know, they have a K-12 certification and, you know, their child development work was basically focused on primary, elementary, and then their high school level, or vice versa. I'm kind of sensitized to this. It just kind of came out of a NASB conference where they, for a whole week, we talked about the importance of child development and understanding how kids learn, even more important than what they learn. Because if we don't understand how they learn at the levels where we're teaching, we're never going to be able to help them learn the what. So, you know, I think that whole question is something that we haven't really thought about in much depth in relationship to some of the certification issues, because we don't require a lot of child development work. We don't require a lot of theory there on, I know most programs, you take one course and then you're done. Anyway, I'm just kind of throwing that out as like, so how do we deal with that issue? What does the Professional Standards Board think about that issue?
I cannot speak for the board and exactly what they think of that issue. I do know that, there are specific development courses that you would take if you are, pitching your educational program toward primary or secondary.
Right.
And I do know that there are at least some different skills that one needs to, you know, differentiate between teaching elementary and secondary. However, I do think there is probably more commonality than there is difference. And a lot of that is not as much difference in learning theory as difference in just how you approach the students themselves.
Well, I think I concur with that, but I also think that we know that children's brains develop very differently when they're young mm-hmm. than when they're older. And they learn very differently when they're younger than when they're older. So I just think that might be something at some point in time we're going to have to really, you know, I know I've been hammering this drum for a long time about this generalist certificate at the elementary level. But a generalist certificate at the K-12 level even bothers me more. But I'm not going to go in there tonight. So thank you. Sorry for meandering there.
I think I meandered a bit as well. So any other questions for Dr. Bradshaw before we move on to the next regulation? And again, to the extent that people do have questions, Dr. Bradshaw won't be here, but they can be questions. Send them to me and to Kathleen, and we will make sure that they get answered. Okay, Dr. Bradshaw, if you wanted to move on to Regulation 1539, Health Education Teacher, and again, this is for information.
So the Health Education Teacher Regulation is standard, but it is the first regular education non-core certification that I've tackled during my time as Executive Director. The only difference between this and the core certifications is the inclusion of Section 4.1.1.5, which details the process for those seeking certification through the 91 days of long-term substitute teaching. If you recall, we defined that pathway in greater detail in Regulation 1510, which we did earlier this year. And we have also created better detail of what will be included, or better detail that will be included in all non-core certification areas going forward. And so this section 4.1.1.5 will be replicated in the non-core certifications because only the non-core certifications are eligible for the 91-day pathway. Are there any questions? Would you like me to go through that section in any more detail?
Yeah, any questions or comments for Dr. Bradshaw?
I do have one last thing. There are two approved practices. Excuse me, I always have a problem with praxis exams for this certification. An applicant can take either a standalone health education praxis or a combined physical and health education praxis. And most of our health educators take the combined praxis.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? Okay, I'm going to take that as a no. So thank you very much, Dr. Bradshaw. We appreciate you being here tonight with us. And we're going to move on to the section on public comment. And I do believe we have several people that are signed up for public comment. So I'm just going to go ahead. And at this point in time, this public comment is only on public comment for regulations. There was an opportunity via email prior to the meeting. There also is the page at the door. And if you didn't sign up and you plan to provide any public comment on the regulations, if you're logged in via the URL, if you could type in your name, your organization, your comment topic into the chat box. And then again, if you're only participating via phone and you wish to make verbal public comment, you can log in via the meeting URL. And I would just note that the board doesn't respond to any questions or comments or engage in any dialogue with those that are offering comments during the board meeting. So I believe that we do have one person that is signed up. If you're in an organization, you're 3 minutes, an individual 2 minutes. And it looks like Ms. Smith has just put up a timer on here. Ms. Smith, I think that we have one person signed up. Is that correct?
We do, President Sweeney. Ms. Mills is in the room and would like to provide public comment so we can. She has indicated she is from an organization. So, yes, so I will start the 3-minute timer when she's ready, and I'll let her reintroduce herself.
Okay, and can we make sure that she's near the microphone? Because if she just talked, I could hear someone talking, but I couldn't actually hear any words. So I just want to make sure that anyone who's on the line can hear her. And when you start, if you could state your name and your organization so everyone can hear.
Okay, let's test. I'll allow her to say her first and last name.
Noah Mills.
That's perfect. Thank you. And can you see the timer so that we don't have to cut you off?
I certainly can.
Okay, perfect. Then we will start the timer when you start talking.
Thank you so much for having me today. I'm very excited to be here. Emily, we're ready to come speak today. My name is Noah Mills. I'm 23 years old. I am the founder of my own nonprofit organization entitled Rethink EDU, which is an educational reform organization targeted towards Northern Delaware. In addition to those things, I am Miss Mary Delaware USA, with Miss USA organization. I'm a 2-time published author with Barnes & Noble. And in addition to that, I am a human, just like you. Outside of these things, before I accomplished all of those things, I was a student at the University of Delaware. And during that time, I actually was experiencing a very traumatic experience in which 13 young ladies in my sorority came to my room during the area of midterms at 3 a.m. With intent to harm me. And after that, I struggled severely with severe depression and anxiety for approximately 47 days. After contacting authorities all the way up to the presidential level, very unsuccessful with any being turned to any resources that could really help, aid in my healing, I guess you could say. My parents, my church, my organizations, everyone that reached out, we were unsuccessful. And during that time, I decided to utilize my pain and turn it into some purpose. So I actually, throughout those 47 days, utilized all of these resources around me and my family, which is the difference between me sitting before you today. I did not take my life as one of the 6 individuals in the USA that struggled with or make a plan to commit suicide in high school and or college, according to the CDC, and also one of 3 students in high school as of 2019, according to the CDC, who struggled with severe anxiety and depression. So not only is Regulation 615 relevant, I was the individual that had breakfast with Dennis with Senator Nicole Ford to write it. So I sat down with her, shared my story, and I had the opportunity to draft 615 2.0 2.1, and which would be, in my hope, a way to turn my story into something that would allow students that come up behind me to not have to struggle with being able to access the resources that I couldn't at the time. So the difference between me sitting here before you today, after I shared with my mother at that time that I didn't want to take my life, is the resources and the support that I received significantly through my parents, my father that sits there, my mother who's in Florida right now, speaking at a conference. But I definitely would urge you to think about, your sisters, your brothers, and the humans around you with your heart and, the things that they struggle with and how you can be of aid to them during this time of this regulation. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that you are here with us in a number of ways, and that you used your past and the troubles that you faced to ensure that other students would have a better chance. So thank you very much. Appreciate your comments.
Thank you so much for allowing me to share. I genuinely appreciate it.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else signed up for public comment?
We do not have anyone else signed up for public comment on regulations.
Okay, great. Then we are going to move on to state board business. So in order to center our work around our vision, mission, guiding principles, the state board is agreed to revisit these items at each meeting for those who may be listening. We typically do pull it up on the screen. It is also on our e-board site. So if it's not on our screen, it is on our e-board site. But we're going to run through our committee and meeting reports, and all members have the opportunity to provide information in a written format on any events or committee meetings that they attended over the last meeting, which helped to move our work forward. There was, I think, one or two that were posted online. Specifically, Dr. Noble, I think, had done some work with NASB as well, and just making sure that there are any questions or comments that people want to address. So I'm going to open it up for the floor. But before I do that, I just want to make a couple of brief comments. So first of all, I know we don't have a lot of board members in person there tonight. I'm not there as well. So I would really welcome feedback from board members. And again, you know, funneling it directly to me or to Ms. Smith. Jenna will be back soon. Really excited to have her back. Just on thoughts on the hybrid format that we've been using. We just kind of went to this relatively recently. So I'd really love to get feedback from board members on how they feel about being back in person. My intention actually was to be there tonight, but unfortunately I was not able to be there physically. But I really would like to get that feedback because I do think it's nice to the extent that we can be there, but I also recognize limitations and any concerns from a health standpoint that people do have, because certainly, you know, COVID still exists, as we all know. So I'd really just like feedback. So that's the first thing, as people, how they feel about the hybrid meeting and their comfort at being in the room, because I think that's important. I'd like to thank everyone that actually physically is there as well, particularly those of us that are presenting to us, because it is tough to present to an empty room. So we appreciate those that were able to be there very much. So thank you to all of those. Also like to say that we are going to have a student member very soon at our November meeting. So I'm really excited about that. Unfortunately, I cannot make an announcement yet because it has not, I haven't seen a press release yet. So that news is still to come, but really excited to have another student voice. And I know that our board member is gonna really make a contribution to us, and very much looking forward to making that introduction in November. So keep an eye out in your emails. And as soon as I'm able to release that, I will. So really looking forward to that. I would also like to congratulate Wally, who was on the phone tonight, because he was, for those of you that may or may not know, he was named 40 under 40 by Delaware Business Times. So, you know, they recognized, you know, Wally's contribution on the board, Wally's mentoring. I mean, he really is just such a figure for our youth. Not just from an educational standpoint, but I am just personally very pleased to have been able to serve with him, both when he was vice president and now as a member of the board. So I just want to say congratulations, Wally, and how much we appreciate the work that you do with us. So those were kind of my comments from a P20 standpoint. We are continuing to work to try to build that subcommittee on teacher retention and recruitment. So that's really a bit of a work in progress. So more to come there, just trying to kind of round out sort of who's going to be leading that and some of the individuals on that. So again, that's something that's kind of happening, but so I'll say in between our official board meetings. They're more than quarterly actually, because we've added meetings, but just so people are aware, that is still to come. So I'm going to stop there, open it up for any questions or comments. And if board members have any questions for me or for anyone who had comments on anything that had been submitted via writing.
Hi, this is Audrey Noble. I'd just like to share a couple things from the NASB Government Affairs Committee meeting that I went to in early October. We had an in-depth conversation about the maintenance of equity, which is a set of provisions in the American Rescue Plan. I know the secretary has talked to us about this a bit and how our different districts are addressing this. Basically, it's a set of protections that safeguard school districts and schools that serve a large share of students from low-income backgrounds against experiencing disproportionate reductions in funding in fiscal years 22 and 23. I just wanted to let the board know, if you're interested in learning more about that, on our site, I submitted a letter from Secretary Cardona that kind of highlights the key issues there, and also the NASB public education position statement that also kind of delves into the maintenance of equity issues. There was also a interesting and ongoing conversation about assessment and accountability, and we did have some conversations about how some states are dealing with chronic absenteeism and the lack of, in some states, they even have lack of virtual instruction. So USDOE is providing technical assistance in that area, so I thought I'd just share that with you. The other thing at the conference, I facilitated a session on actually dealing with teacher preparation programs, and we had some national experts there that kind of strongly made the point that we, instead of thinking about as teacher preparation programs, we need to think more of it as professional development systems, in that the development of an educator is kind of a lifelong process. It may start in college or it may start in high school, and it goes on through the rest of their lives. Having been a teacher, I know that's true. I'm sure Secretary Bunting feels the same way. And so thinking about it as a career-long integrated system of growth that's informed by research and supported by policy. So we had an interesting conversation about that, and also more focused on the importance of addressing some of the recruitment and retention issues, and shared some examples from across the country where people are, and I know we're doing some of these things in our state as well, mobilizing aspiring teachers and making better use of student teachers, and also younger people that are in high school programs, building on resources that paraprofessionals bring to the classroom. I know that came out clearly in our West Ed report that we have a resource there that we probably could make better use of if they had the support and professional development to actually move toward, from being paraprofessionals into being teachers. That was also a pathway that we talked about as far as expanding the diversity of our teacher workforce. We talked about examining teacher licensure assessments to determine any effects or unintended consequences of some of the assessments. And I know that PSB has been involved in that. Providing high quality instructional materials, as Monica Gant has been leading the charge on that. And so I was kind of proud at this session to be able to report that, you know, our state is involved in a lot of these things. One of the last things that we talked about was trying to develop and maintain realistic expectations for teachers and their responsibilities. And some of the learnings that we've had in this past year, and as we talked about accelerated learning, and reflecting on the science of learning in the classroom, we need to also be aware of, we need to start taking some things off these people's plates. You know, we need to be getting rid of things that are no longer as important as we may have thought at one point in time. So it was a really, I thought, rich discussion. The conference is all online, so anybody that is on the board that would like to see the different sessions. Some really interesting ideas came out. We talked about some lessons from the pandemic. They were talking about how accelerated learning is in many states is yielding what people are calling power standards, a focused and kind of more targeted look at which standards are really most important, and making revisions in that way. Moving forward with more authentic learning and more authentic assessments. And I mean, I guess the message for board members came out that there's a real importance now of having open and courageous yet civil conversations and leadership in with the things that we're doing. These are difficult times. People are upset about a lot of things. And they were talking about how that the experts we need now are those who can heal divisions. And I thought that was a really interesting perspective, that it's kind of all of our roles to try to be healing divisions that we're experiencing instead of exacerbating them. So anyway, that's kind of the report out from the NASB conference, and I appreciated the opportunity to represent us there. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for representing us. We appreciate your time there. And I know those were some long hours in terms of just being on the Zoom calls or however they did them. But any questions or comments for Dr. Noble before we move on?
Yes, this is Wally Rushton. I just have a brief follow-up question about the distinction between teacher development and professional development. It's an interesting distinction that you raised there, because, you know, I've heard in the context of early education, early childhood education, talking about, you know, teaching as a profession, and the idea of, you know, these folks are you know, professionals. But I didn't really think about it in the broader context of, you know, educators in the K-12 system and the importance of doing so. So just wondering if you could maybe, you know, highlight just some of the key distinctions that are present between sort of thinking about, you know, professional development versus teacher development for the broader, you know, teaching population, and why that distinction in vernacular is important.
Yeah, I think the point that I was trying to make that was that I think in the past we've thought of teacher preparation as the time that a teacher is in college being prepared to be a teacher. And then we think about professional development as everything else that happens afterwards. And too often I think professional development has been doing the catch up, taking care of things that weren't taken care of when the teachers were in their college. And I think what the conversation now is to understand that it's one system of development, and it starts before that. It starts before a person actually makes the decision to become a teacher, and experiences that young people have in schools and models that they have. And it's a whole process of career development, and college plays a role, and, you know, and the work that they have in schools and mentoring and coaching and all those things are all part of a system of development for professionals, instead of thinking about it as silos often thought in the past. So I just found it, for me, you know, kind of, and it really, as we were talking about that, it really promoted conversations across disciplines, across you know, preparation at the level of college and when they're actually in the classroom, and lots of conversations about mentors and coaches and the roles that teachers can play in their schools over time. So I think that was more about it, what it was, is more about thinking about it as a career long a lifelong learning process, becoming a professional educator. And you're always learning. I mean, I know one thing that I felt when, especially when I went to the university and started teaching, I learned more from those students every day than I ever knew. And I think that perspective of recognizing that you're a lifelong learner, it starts early and it goes all the way through until you close the door. And that was just a different way for me to conceptualize it. And I think it was an empowering way for the educators in the room to think about it.
No, I appreciate the context, and you know, that certainly clarifies it for me. I'll just also add, you know, as you talk about the prospective development opportunities as you grow as a professional, you also aren't siloing out the formative experiences you had leading into the profession, because they inform the way that you approach, you know, whatever curriculum that you encounter and your techniques, and you bring something to the table when you come into the profession. So I like the idea of you know, pulling all of that together. At least that's what I think I heard you say.
That's what I said. Thank you, Wally.
Sure.
Questions or comments?